Welcome to the Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas B. Gibbs, a broadcast that examines our ever-changing world through the lens of the United States Constitution. Douglas B. Gibbs is on the air.
Welcome, my friends. Douglas B. Gibbs here, Mr. Constitution Hour, KPRZ, another show on a Saturday evening, 9 p.m. KPRZ, KPRZ.com, or on any of the podcast platforms that are available out there, and I'm on pretty much all of them. Just look up Mr. Constitution Hour at by Douglas V. Gibbs. All right, so let's start with State of the Union Thursday night. President Biden delivered his State of the Union. The State of the Union is provided for in the United States Constitution in Article 2, Section 3, at the very beginning of that section. The clause reads, "He shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient." So from time to time, so it's not required for it to be annually, as we are sometimes told, but that is the tradition. That tradition was established by those early presidents, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison. And then what it says is that this is not a campaign speech. This is not a speech to attack your opposition. This is not a speech for attacking a former president or a future competitor in a new election, or maybe that person's a little bit of both. What it's for is giving the Congress and the public, because of course the public's going to pay attention, information of the State of the Union. What is the State of the Union? Where are we at? Is it good? Is it bad? What do we need to do? And then it says, and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. So the president's job is to say, okay, this is the State of the Union. To do or accomplish this or that, we need to, and here's my recommendations. Recommendations. The president is not a ruler. He is not the guy in charge. He is not there to dictate to Congress. Congress can take his recommendations. They can consider it and then, consider proposing legislation. And if it passes, he can sign it. He is not the ruler. The legislation is where the power of government begins, with law. And so this idea that the federal government has supremacy over everything, and it's the president's job to run everything. He's the ruler of the, what do they say? The leader of the free world. No, he's a administrative executive whose job it is to execute the laws of the country. But his job to execute the laws doesn't exist unless they are laws, which begins with a legislative process. He is not to use the State of the Union to attack his opposition. He is not to use the State of the Union to try to drum up his base. And I mean, the guy is, when it comes to the State of the Union, and I was just watching this earlier this week, in a poll, 72% of the people polled, 72% of likely voters believe that the country is not okay. So over 70% of the country says, hey, the State of the Union's not good. Either, give us some legitimate plans here or step aside. That's what he's being told. So I don't know what you thought about the State of the Union earlier this week. It was, for a lot of people, as expected, dark, opposition-oriented, an attack against the opposition, a campaign speech, not a State of the Union as originally intended when it was fashioned for the Constitution of the United States. All right. That is topic number one. Quick topic. Didn't have to spend too much time on that. Topic number two. So, crime is out of control in this country. Crime is higher than ever before. Prop 47 in California has been under fire because what it did is it reduced the police punishment, the policing of crime in the state of California. And so, it's important to be tough on crime. It's important to have harsh penalties for harsh criminal offenses. But it's like, as a child, I remember my parents saying, you need to be big on the big things, but small on the small things. You don't become big on the small things and small on the big things. And that's essentially what's been going on in our country. But here's the thing that's interesting. So there's a happy medium. Yes, you want to be tough on crime, but you don't want to be a police state. You want to have a reasonable, when it comes to a case-by-case basis, reason is used, and you get reasonable when it comes to certain situations. Well, it's first-time offender, and the conditions around it was this, and so, you know, maybe this punishment might be as not as harsh. Maybe this needs to be harsher because of the because it needs to be punitive because of, you know, the history of the person's involvement in such and such group or whatever, a gang or whatever. And so that's the way it should be run. What has happened is we have extremes. We either get too harsh or not harsh enough on crime. We are either letting the criminals run away and get away with everything and serve nothing, or we run the risk of being a police state where the police become so harsh that even those who are law-abiding citizens get nervous and scared. And this reminds me of a quote that Benjamin Franklin gave us, and this goes way back to Benjamin Franklin. But it's one of my favorite quotes of all time, and I want you to listen to the words very carefully because it ties into what I'm talking about. Then I'm going to give you a couple examples of some stuff that's going on here. So here's the quote. Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. So when the people are virtuous, when they are law-abiding citizens, you don't have to have a heavy police power. Why? Because the people are law-abiding citizens. They do what's best for society. You don't see a maliciousness between human beings in the public sector, or in the public, should I say, in the general public. And so policing responsibilities are minimal. I remember as a kid, you know, the cop that had the beat in your neighborhood wasn't the enemy. He was a part of the neighborhood. He was there to help. And then if there is some type of criminal activity, then the police, you know, engage. But today, it seems like crime is rampant, and our police have become more militaristic. These police departments now have these SWAT unit vehicles that look like tanks. But the story that really caught my attention and really, for me, tied this to what Benjamin Franklin said, if you're not a virtuous people, you're going to become corrupt and vicious and have more need of masters, more need of an iron fist because of the corruptness, the viciousness. New York subway has the National Guard now, also at the subway. And I was watching this video of New York subway, man, and you know, you're being checked. You've got the wand to make sure you don't have any weapons on you, and you know, your purses are being checked and everything else. You know, and there's a National Guardsman standing there with a rifle in his hand. So it looked like a scene out of 1984 or something. It was so Orwellian looking. And I was talking to someone not long ago who was telling me how back during the 50s, it was not uncommon to see a teenager, a kid, on his way to school on the subway with a rifle in his hands because he was a part of the shooting club. And so he had his rifle. He's carrying his rifle on the subway. He rides the subway. He goes to school, walks in school with his rifle. There's no metal detectors. There's no wands to make sure you're not, you know, carrying something. Because it was a virtuous society, no one's worried. You didn't see the mass shootings. You didn't see the school shootings. Because it was a virtuous society. The virtuous society has gone away from that virtue, gone away from that godly foundation, those Christian principles that it was founded on. And now we have rejected God. We have rejected those principles. We've rejected the moral standard of right and wrong. We don't even know if we're boy or girl anymore because the standard has been so screwed up. And instead of a kid carrying his rifle on the subway to go to school because he's part of the shooting team, we've got everybody being checked to make sure they don't have anything, a light knife, lighter, whatever, before they get on. I was talking to a gentleman years ago, and he was telling me at Redondo Beach, which is in Los Angeles County, when he was a kid back in 62, he was riding his bike, and he had his .22 rifle up on his handlebars, and he's, now, and understand, you know, we didn't have people freaking out, oh my gosh, a kid with a gun, how irresponsible. No, kids were taught to respect it. It was a tool, no different than a hammer. And and he said he was like 12 or something like that. And he's riding his bike in 62, .22 rifle on the handlebars, down the street there, Redondo Beach in Los Angeles County. Police car sees him, pulls up beside him, says, hey, kiddo, where are you going with that rifle? Kid says, oh, I'm going up to those eucalyptus trees over there to get some target practice in. And the cop says, okay, well, there's some construction in the area, so be careful. The kid says, okay, and off he went. Whole different game. Why? Because we were a virtuous society. Virtuous society. You're not worried about the kid going and shooting a bunch of, you know, the school up or shooting somebody or whatever. He's going to do some target practice. There's construction nearby, but he's responsible enough to aim for the tree, to hit his targets, not aim it towards the construction site and so on and so forth. Because people are responsible, because people had a set moral standard. We knew right and wrong, and we acted upon it. It was a virtuous society, or at least more virtuous than it is today. So you lose your virtue. You're not a godly society. You let go of those Christian principles. You refuse to adhere to what is right and wrong. And then you fall prey to Benjamin Franklin's quote. Now I can go back and read it one more time, and hopefully for some of you, it'll actually make more sense. Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. As we leave our virtuous selves behind, as we leave a moral standard behind, as we embrace sin, as we become woke, as we decide to normalize certain behaviors, we welcome tyranny, because we are no longer a law-abiding society. We are not a virtuous society. We have become corrupt and vicious, and therefore we have more need of masters. We need the armed patrols. We need the SWAT tanks. We need the National Guard at the subway. And it's a shame, because I've watched this country. My generation is the last generation that really was before the technology, before the woke, before all of this lefty, progressive garbage really started taking hold. It was kind of starting when I was a kid in the 70s, because you had the hippies. But the generation after the hippies pushed back. And so my generation, well, I mean, I missed being a baby boomer by 1 year, according to the calendar, whatever it says the different generations are. And, you know, and I've noticed, too, that not only have we lost our virtue, we've lost our hope. Think about the generations here. So we have the baby boomers, and then mine is Generation X, then was Generation Y, or no, then we have the millennials, then Generation Y, and then what's the current one? Generation Z. Z is what in the alphabet? It's the last letter of the alphabet. We have sent the message to this generation, they are the last generation, that after this, you're done. You know, climate change and, you know, all, you know, technology and the AI and all of the economic problems and, you know, globalism. No one has hope. They believe this is the end. No wonder this younger generation is out of control. What do they got to live for? There's no hope for them in their minds. We have to turn that around. We have to restore the virtuous society. We have to restore the hope. We have to say, hey, this next generation, you're the alpha generation. You're the beginning of a new virtuous age. Of course, they're being told they're the part of a new leftist age, a new progressive age. You know, communism, socialism, the same garbage we've used over and over in history and has failed and has been become tyranny and has killed people. We need to get back to our Christian roots. We need to get back to our virtuous foundation. Without it, there is no freedom. Without it, this is Generation Z. Without it, it is over. Okay, let's get on back now to the next topic. Thanks for being here, by the way. This is Mr. Constitution Hour on KPRZ. My name is Douglas V. Gibbs. I am Mr. Constitution, and I come to you every week right here on KPRZ, KPRZ.com, or whatever podcast channel you're listening to. I also have a radio program on Saturday afternoons from 1 to 3 on KMET 1490 AM, 98.1 FM in Southern California. If you miss that show live, no problem. You can also check out past episodes there. You can either go to KMET1490AM.com, find my show page, go up to the link area, find the Saturday shows on Saturday shows, find my show, and there is a podcast button on that page, which will take you to the SoundCloud platform, which is where those shows are saved. Or you can go to DouglasVGibbs.com. Go to DouglasVGibbs.com. hover your mouse over the radio link in the link bar, and a drop menu will come down, and then hit Constitution Radio for all of my past Constitution Radio shows. I also have my past KPRZ shows there, and also the old archive of my old KCAA shows, which I was on that station from, 2011 to like 2015. And so those shows also are available at DouglasVGibbs.com. Also, while you're there at DouglasVGibbs.com, on that link bar on the far right, in all caps, it says join, and there's a star next to it. That means become a patron. $9 a month, you become a patron, you help fund the movement. Fund the movement, and down the road, as we build this bigger, we will have exclusive things available to the patrons. Right now, it's just a matter of helping the movement, but once we get this built, exclusive benefits, exclusive goodies for patrons at only $9 a month. So be sure to hit the join link also so you can become a patron. And we're using Stripe. We don't use PayPal or something like that anymore. You can donate to me through PayPal or Zelle or Venmo. That's okay. I do still have those up. But if you become a patron at DouglasVGibbs.com, or if you donate at DouglasVGibbs.com, it's done through Stripe, which is a different merchant processor. It's not PayPal. If you do want to donate and you decide you're okay with PayPal, you can find me on PayPal with DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com if you want to do it that way, or just go to PayPal.com/PayPalMe/DouglasVGibbs. PayPal.com/PayPalMe/DouglasVGibbs, or Venmo Douglas-Gibbs-3. That's Douglas-Gibbs-3. I love the fact that 3 is there. 3 is my lucky number for the Trinity. Douglas-Gibbs-3. That's DouglasGibbs-3. Then it'll ask you for the last 4 of my number, 3975. 3975. That's if you want to use Venmo. Or if you want to use Zelle, direct bank to bank, that's my favorite. Zelle, Z-E-L-L-E. If you don't have it, get it. You can, to find me, you can use DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com. DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com if you use Zelle. All right. So now for the big thing I want to talk about, and this will probably take the rest of the program. And I want you to sit down and not worry about what I'm going to say, because what I'm going to say may seem a little harsh, a little drastic. I'm going to say something that may set you back. I want you to understand it, so we're going to go through the full context of what I mean. So here's what I have to say. Are you ready? Are you ready for my shocking statement? The Bill of Rights broke the Constitution. The Bill of Rights was a problem. The Bill of Rights, the first 9 amendments to the United States Constitution should, in my opinion, were more damaging than helpful. It should have only been the 10th Amendment. It should have been the only amendment. It should have been the 10th Amendment should be the 1st Amendment, and then the 11th Amendment should be the 2nd, and so on and so forth. 9 of those, the first 9 amendments, in my opinion, caused more damage than help and than good. Now, that's the Bill of Rights. Everybody says, oh, well, Doug, you're saying then you want the government to stomp on our rights. No, that's not what I'm saying. Wait for the context. Let's go through this so we understand what I'm talking about. So the way the Constitution was designed, it's very simple. It's a pretty good outline. The preamble was designed to be the introduction of the Constitution. Article 1 was designed to establish the legislative branch, the Congress. The entire article is about that, except in Article 1, Section 10, it does give legislative prohibitions to the states. No state shall is the beginning of those different clauses. Article 2 is the creation, establishment, and rules regarding the executive branch. The Article 3 is the establishment and the setting up of the rules regarding the judicial branch. Article 4 is regarding, because now that we're a union, the states have to work together. While they are sovereign and they are separate entities, it is a firmer union. And so under Article 4, it provides for what the states need to do when it comes to being a union, such as full faith and credit, reciprocity. And then in Article 5, that provides the amendment process. Article 6 is rules and dictates to the federal government. And then Article 7 is ratification. nowhere in those first seven articles does it dictate to the states anything except for in Article 1, Section 10, where it's very specific that it does that. Because the states wrote the Constitution. Federal government is the creation by the states. And the reason why this comes up, and the reason why I brought this up, is because on a program that I do on Tuesdays, 4 o'clock Pacific p.m. on Tuesdays on Rumble on the Untold History Channel, last few weeks we've been talking about the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment gets people, for lack of a better way of putting it, up in arms. Because we have this idea that the Constitution codifies our rights. That the Constitution makes sure we get our rights. That it guarantees our rights. That it protects our rights. And that the federal government is there to make sure that that is carried out. So that not only are they not supposed to interfere with our rights, but if a state acts in a manner that is not approving to the federal government, the federal government has the authority to then police the states regarding those rights. This is partly due to the existence of the Bill of Rights and the incorporation doctrine, which came out of the 14th Amendment. The episode in particular in question aired on, 2/20/2024, in this particular episode, 2/27, February 27th, 2024 on Rumble. If you want to find it, rumble.com/V4G389R. Those are all lowercase. So rumble.com/V as in victory, 4G as in golf, 389R, hyphen, learning, hyphen, the, hyphen, constitution, hyphen, second, that's 2ND, hyphen, amendment, dot HTML. So rumble.com/V4G389R, all lowercase, dash, learning, dash, the dash, constitution, dash, second, dash, amendment, dot HTML. So once again, one more time, rumble.com/V4G389R, hyphen, learning, hyphen, the, hyphen, constitution, hyphen, second, hyphen, amendment, dot HTML. Now, we get into this discussion. The reason why this is important is the Bill of Rights puts into language, through the basically using the enumeration doctrine, our rights. It lists rights. It does not guarantee your rights. It does not protect your rights. Your rights are God-given. Your rights belong to you because God gave them to you. And your rights are not this magical thing you must have, and that's just the way it is, and everybody must bow down to it. Rights are something to be pursued. Rights are something that is a part of the natural order of things. You know, it says in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You don't have the right to be happy. You have the right to pursue it. You don't have a right to own a gun. You have the right to pursue it. Go through the process. Government's not supposed to interfere with your ability to access it. But you don't have the right to just magically have a gun in your hand. You know, you have to earn it. You have to, you know, earn the money to purchase it. You need to find the one you want. You know, or whatever it takes. You know, property. The government's not supposed to just give it to you. That's not what it means by a right. You have to pursue it. Education is not a right. You don't have a right to education where government has to pay for it and give it to you. But you have a right to pursue it. And that means that government's not supposed to interfere with your attempt to access it. So your rights is not about government giving you something. It's about you being able to pursue something. Your rights are about you being able to access this opportunity to pursue what it is. So once again, when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms, yes, you have a right to keep and bear arms. What that means, it doesn't mean that government then must make sure you have a gun in your hand, or all government cannot make any laws regarding guns. You have a right to keep and bear arms. You have a right to possess one, to own one, to carry one. But you must pursue it. Government's not supposed to put obstacles in the way unless there are laws that the local community have agreed upon. For example, if the local community says, you know what? People ought to be a certain age to be able to purchase a gun. Didn't say that they have to be a certain age to fire one, but to purchase it. Now, if the a child can own one, but the parent must purchase it for them and, you know, be there when they shoot or something like that. Whatever they decide the law must be. It's a local issue. The Bill of Rights was not designed to make that happen. The Bill of Rights was designed to tell the federal government, by the way, this is a local issue, none of your business. Don't make any laws, shall not be infringed. So now what we have is this incorporation idea where, well, you know, state, nobody can, you know, interfere with my right to bear arms, so therefore the state laws are also unconstitutional, and the federal government has to tell the states not to get in the way. So we're going to have a federal court to discipline a state if they try to take away my right. Wait a second. It's not what the Constitution says. Shall not be infringed means every single gun law is unconstitutional. The preamble to the Bill of Rights says that the Bill of Rights was pointed at the federal government. So every single federal gun law is unconstitutional. Not because they're trying to protect your rights, not because they're trying to guarantee your right, but because it's none of the federal government's business to make any laws regarding your gun rights. They don't have the authority. The federal government wasn't designed to handle gun rights issues. It was designed to handle issues regarding the union, war with other countries, trade with other countries, maritime law, border laws, disputes between the states, and so on and so forth. So that is what it was designed for. So therefore, it's a reminder that the federal government has no authority to make any gun laws. Now, if there was no Second Amendment, they wouldn't have the authority anyway. But it would less confuse the whole situation. This is where the Bill of Rights kind of broke the Constitution. Because the Tenth Amendment, which was already understood, but it was laid out in an amendment, was that if it's not in the Constitution as an authority to the federal government cannot make laws regarding that. It's not a power that they have. And guns, other than the Second Amendment, are not mentioned in the Constitution. The first seven articles makes no mention of guns. Therefore, the federal government was not given any authority over guns. But the states are not prohibited from doing it. And all power belonged to states before the Constitution. Therefore, the states can make laws regarding guns. And that's where people, once again, get upset, especially Californians. Well, then you're saying the states can stomp all over our rights. No. That's not what I'm saying. It's your right. You have the right to keep and bear arms. They're not supposed to interfere with that right. But if the community decides on certain laws regarding it, it's a local issue, those laws can be made. If you don't like them, change them. Disallow them. Throw the bums out that created those laws. Owning a gun is a local issue. It's none of the federal government's business. The Bill of Rights, with the first nine amendments, has everybody convinced that the federal, including the federal government and all of the people on both parties, that that our rights is a federal issue, and that the federal government must, what does it say in the, there's a comment section, a bunch of comments in, so that's Learning the Constitution episode I did on the Second Amendment back at 227. And this guy says, oh, wait a second now. The Constitution was created to forbid governments of this republic from regulating arms. Well, if that's the case, then every single gun law would be disallowed, even at the state level. So, hey, don't worry. Your four-year-old can go buy a gun. There's no background checks. There's no age limit. Why? Well, because shall not be infringed means shall not be infringed. So if this person, as they're saying, Second Amendment was created to forbid all governments in this republic from regulating arms, then it applies to states too, and the states can't make any laws whatsoever. Neither can the federal government. Shall not be infringed means shall not be infringed. That would mean that even the federal background check law would be unconstitutional, which it is. So, is that what you want? Do you think that's what the founders want? Absolutely no ability whatsoever to make any law regarding guns at any level. Go ahead, toddler. If you got enough money, go buy your gun. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous what I'm saying, but That's what you're calling for here. And if the Bill of Rights wasn't there, there's no authority for the federal government to regulate firearms, but there was nothing prohibiting the states. So prior to the Bill of Rights, which didn't get ratified until 1791, so federal government was already in place for a couple of years, there was no Second Amendment. So how did they survive? Were there mass shootings everywhere? Were there school shootings everywhere? Was just anybody buying a gun and shooting the place up? No, of course not. Number one, it's a virtuous society. Number two, states still have their own laws. Now, granted, it wasn't even close to what it is today. Yes, people could buy their cannons. 12-year-olds walked around with a rifle slung over their shoulder, and that was fine. Once again, get back to the 50s. You know, a 12-year-old or 15-year-old or whatever might carry his 22 rifle on the subway there in New York because he was part of the shooting club or the shooting team. Now, Article 6 is where the Federal Supremacy Clause is. And our good friend who commented on that, who's challenging my stance on all of this, says, well, wait a second, no. It says in Article 6, anything in the Constitution and laws of any state, the contrary, notwithstanding, which means that any state law that contradicts the Second Amendment's language, notwithstanding, in the binding law of that state, is notwithstanding. All things in the U.S. Constitution are binding upon the states. No, it comes down to authority. Once again, this is a misunderstanding. This is a misnomer. I'll give you an example, help you understand. So in the NFL, there is a number of rules that have been created in order to protect quarterbacks. The NFL rule book is the supreme law of the land on the field. That rule book is what's followed. And the referees are to apply that rule book to the game. It is the supreme law of the game. And there is a rule in there, for example, that if a quarterback starts to slide, he's running with a ball and he slides, that's like being tackled. He's given himself up. Therefore, you hit him, you tackle him, you slam on him, you're in violation of that rule because he has the ability to slide, and that's a way to protect the quarterback. That way he's not getting hit and tackled and munched. Then someone comes along and says, well, okay, then that means that all running backs and wide receivers and even a lineman, if they somehow wind up with a ball in their hand and they're running the other way or something, if they slide, that means don't touch, let them slide, and it's over. They've given themselves up. Not necessarily. They have to be touched at least once they're down. Otherwise, they can get right back up and keep on going. Quarterback, it's not the case. Slide rule. It applies only to the quarterback. No, Doug, the rule book is the supreme law of the game. Therefore, it applies to all players. No, because it was originally intended to only apply to quarterbacks. So yes, the rule book is the supreme law of the land, but if the authority lies only in the quarterback there, then that's what it is. Same thing here. The authorities in the Bill of Rights apply to the federal government. The states, because those are local issues, have the ability to make some laws. Well then, Doug, you're saying that the states can stomp all over rights. No, I'm not. Don't let them. It's our job. Our job as citizens of our states to monitor, to be informed, to pay attention to, and to disallow things that we don't like. That's our job. It's not the federal government's job to police the state. It's ours. And the rules regarding our rights applies to the federal government because the federal government is not a domestic government. It was designed to handle union stuff. So therefore, our rights are none of their business. Our rights is a domestic issue. And it's up to the states to handle domestic issues. And we're going to need laws regarding rights every once in a while. Shall not be infringed. Congress shall make no law. Does not apply because it's a state issue. So Congress shall make no law is the beginning of the First Amendment. So freedom of speech, that means that Congress can make no law whatsoever. Federal government can make no law whatsoever regarding speech. Well, Doug, it's not completely because of, you know, what about slander? You know, I mean, you got to make a law about slander. No, it says no, Congress shall make no law regarding speech. So even federal slander laws are unconstitutional. Oh, were you saying people just go around slandering each other? No. Federal government doesn't have the authority, but the states do. The states then need to make those laws. And as a people, we need to make sure those laws are in place. If we think it should be a federal law, then they need to amend the Constitution to give the federal government that authority. Then they can make the law. But slander, speech, press, all of those are local issues. None of the federal government's business. Federal government has no authority over any of that. Now, that said, these rights are so precious to us that the state constitutions have language that's either identical or very similar to the Bill of Rights. But the states do reserve the right or the ability to make some laws, but they maintain the same attitude that the right to keep and bear arms belongs to individuals. That's an individual right. That freedom of speech is a pretty darn important thing. And there shouldn't be any laws that interfere with freedom of speech unless it's something like slander. Freedom of press is important. We shouldn't be arresting our journalists because they gave an opinion you didn't like. and so on and so forth. But this idea that the Bill of Rights applies to states and the federal government is there to police the states on the Bill of Rights is unconstitutional, is wrong, and it's dangerous. Do you really want a federal court dictating to your local government what it can and can't do regarding your rights? It's none of their business. It's none of the federal government's business. Federal government was not created to handle our day-to-day runnings of our lives. Well, how do we know this? Did they tell us that? Absolutely they did. So now what we do is we go to the Federalist Papers. The Federalist Papers are an interesting, it's an interesting thing. Because what it was, basically, is the state of New York had a lot of anti-federalists in the state. Anti-federalists were these that were worried that the federal government was going to be tyrannical. They felt that the Constitution went too far. They created too big of a government. It'd be out of control really quick. They did not like the few authorities dictated, and they believed that this new federal government would overpower, supersede, and misconstruct and abuse its powers. In the long term, they were essentially correct. But you got to have the system. You got to have, you know, the problem isn't the Constitution. The problem isn't the federal government. It's people. It's men. Tyrants who have ambition for power and wealth. But if our federal government acted as it was designed, if it operated in a manner as originally intended, it wouldn't be a problem. So the problem is not what's intended. The problem is not what's written. The problem is not the system. The problem is that there are men that are ignoring the allowances, ignoring the laws. So when it came to the federal government, and it only has certain powers, in Federalist Number 5, James Madison wrote this: "The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined." There's not many, and they're defined. They're in the Constitution. If you're going to have the power, it's got to be in the Constitution. "Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former, being the federal government, will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, which, alas, the power of taxation will be, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people." Lives, liberties, and so liberties, that's your rights. And he's saying right here, your liberties, your rights, that's going to be the concern of the states. Once again, let me read this again. "The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. The operations of the federal government will be most extensive and important in times of war and danger, those of the state governments in times of peace and security." If it is your rights, and if it is a local issue, if it has to do with the prosperity of the state or the inner workings of the state or things that involve the lives of the people in the state, it's up to the state to make the laws. If something is determined, it's a connected, should I say, to foreign affairs or preserving the union or promoting the union or protecting the union or, you know, helping the union out with disputes between the states or securing the border, that's a federal authority. It belongs to the federal government and it's defined in the Constitution. Those authorities are listed. They are enumerated. Enumeration doctrine. So either it's a federal power or it's a state power. On rare occasion, you will have things that are concurrent. In other words, both governments have power over it, but even then, their powers are different from each other regarding the issue. Immigration is a great example. Federal government, when it comes to immigration, has the authority of securing the border, of removing persons who have broken law and entered the country, and all of the things that are associated with those those duties. But the states, because the internal order of the state is their authority, they have every authority, every power to detain these individuals, to remove them from society, and not allow them to disrupt the inner workings of their state. The way I like to explain it, it's like a schoolyard, right? You got the principals in charge of the whole schoolyard. You got a teacher that's in charge of a class. And some kid gets out of the schoolyard. It's not supposed to be there. And it's the principal's job to kick the kid off the campus. But does that mean that the teacher cannot lock their door to not allow the kid into their classroom? No, the teacher can lock their door and not allow the kid into their classroom if they don't believe that person's supposed to be in their classroom. That's what the states are allowed to do. If someone gets into the country, he's not supposed to be here, they're here illegally, the federal government's not doing its job, the state can lock their door. Say, hey, we don't want that person in our state. They're here illegally. We have every authority to protect the citizens of our state. So therefore, we're going to close the door. We're going to lock the door. We're going to detain these people. We're going to send them to a federal agency so they can deport them or do whatever else they got to do legally regarding that individual. And then I get this response from people. Well, gosh, Doug, don't you think that's kind of racist? You know, these poor people trying to come to this country. All right, so is it racist to lock your door and when someone knocks on it, say, who is it? No, because you know not everybody out there is best for your home. You don't just throw the door open and let everybody in. They raid your fridge and sleep on the couch. You ask who it is. You vet them. You find out if they are good for your home. If they're not, you don't let them in. It's like if you owned a business, are you just going to hire anybody? Or are you going to hire who's best for your business? Who's going to handle your cash register or handle the assembly line or whatever it is? And who is best qualified to perform that task? Country's no different. If you're going to bring persons in, immigration is a wonderful thing. I love immigration. But they better be good for the country. They better be good for my house or good for my business or whatever. They need to have a skill. They need to come in willing to assimilate into American liberty. If they don't give a care about that stuff, if their goal is to disrupt our liberty, to disrupt our culture, to disrupt our social fabric, then I don't want them coming in. Vet them at the door when they knock. Who is it? Oh, I want to come into your country and become a part of it. Well, what's your background? Are you a criminal? Do you have any skills? Do you have any illnesses? You're not good for the country? You don't get to come in. You're good for the country? Come on in. That's what the process is there for. Immigration process. But we've got a left that has, because they're so good at their idiotic marketing, got everybody convinced that if you don't agree with illegal aliens crossing the border, then you hate immigration. And you're racist, and you hate this group, or you hate that group. And it's junk. It's not true. They've got people convinced of it. Knock on the door, I'll answer. If I believe, after vetting you, you're good for our home, we'll let you in. That's what the immigration process is all about. But anyway, so there's a concurrent power there. Federal government has powers. The states have powers. But most everything else, it's either federal or it's state. When it comes to guns, federal government's got no business getting involved whatsoever. Second Amendment shall not be infringed. It's very clear. But when it comes to states, they can make some laws. Well, gosh, Doug, in California, they're making this law and they're making that law, and it violates Second Amendment. No, it doesn't. It violates your right to keep and bear arms. Second Amendment applies to federal government. Doesn't violate Second Amendment at the state level. It violates your right to keep and bear arms. And if it violates your right to keep and bear arms, if you think it's going too far, then do something about it. Instead of complaining and expecting a federal court to come in to fight your battle. It's not the federal government's business. It's not the federal court's authority. If you don't like it, don't put up with it. Change it. Simple as that. So this idea that all things in the Constitution are binding upon the states because of the supremacy clause is just not true. It depends on authority. So everything that is addressed in the Constitution, just because it's listed, doesn't mean then it applies to the states. Just like, just because there's a rule in the rule book of the NFL that quarterbacks have a slide rule protection, it doesn't then make that rule binding on all players. The authority is to the quarterback. In the Bill of Rights, the authority, it's regarding the federal government, the prohibition. Congress shall make no law, shall not be infringed, so on and so forth. This is language telling the federal government, our rights are none of your business. If it's a right, you can make no laws regarding our rights, period. If the states need to, they can. It's a local issue. But because those rights are our rights, there is a limit. They can't go dictator on us. They can't go tyrannical on us. If they do, then we've got to do something about it. We have every authority to tell the state, no, you've went too far. That is not good law. But the federal government isn't the entity who's tasked with dictating that to the state. We are. This idea that the states, that the federal government's there, the federal courts are there to police the states to make sure they don't mess with our rights is ridiculous. Because that's just not what was, what it says in the Constitution, and that's not what was intended. The federal government cannot legally regulate arms. The states can have some laws regarding arms, but there's a limit. And it's up to us to determine what that limit is, and if they go beyond it, we throw them out, we change the law, we change our state constitution, whatever we need to do. While there can be some laws, that does not mean that the state can make any law. Federal government, though, can make no law. Shall not be infringed means shall not be infringed. I hope that helps clear it up a little bit. So the problem with the Bill of Rights is it was only put in there to tell the federal government hands off, and now we've created this entire complex case law web that manipulates what was originally intended. And that screams, oh, well, that means that if it's in the Constitution, it's binding on the states too, and therefore the federal government's got to police that. And that was never intended. I don't care what the 14th, what you think the 14th Amendment says. Read the language carefully. It doesn't even say what they say it says. It's an interpretation. Well, it implies, well, no. You go by what the Constitution says. It doesn't, I don't care what you think it implies. I don't care what you think it may have said. Let's go by what it says. Break down the language. And I do that all the time. Break down the language. And you go back to who wrote it. Say, well, what did you mean by that? There is congressional testimony. There are letters. There are ratification conventions. There are debates on the floor. All of that's available to us. There's no reason for us to make some crazy interpretation that goes outside the original intent of what was meant. When it comes to our Constitution, when it comes to Second Amendment or the Bill of Rights, there is a misunderstanding. I don't like that word because I think they're purposely playing this game. The Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, the ratifying conventions, even speeches by various founders of the time period, it is clear that the Bill of Rights addressed the new general government, the federal government. Not the states. States would never have ratified anything, including the Bill of Rights, if they believed it was giving state power away to the federal government. That if their authority over their internal affairs was being given away to a central government that has the potential to be tyrannical, the states would have never ratified that. And when it comes to gun rights, there's a reason that 49 out of 50 states, California being the exception, have their own gun language. If the Second Amendment applied to states, they wouldn't need to have that gun language. They have it because the Second Amendment doesn't. It's because the Bill of Rights was not incorporated to the states. So once again, I hope this helps clear that up. And thank you for spending the time with me. The radio show is now over. We've gotten to the end. No break today, but I appreciate you spending the time with me. God bless. And as always, united we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America. My friends, God bless you. DouglasVGibbs.com. DouglasVGibbs.com. Everything I do is there. The blog is there. My radio programs are there. Videos I've done are there. And in the near future, podcasts. We're going to start doing some more podcasting. And you can, and our store, we're trying to get their store going. Right now, all of my stuff's at Amazon. We have a new book coming out called, I'm really excited about this book. I be honest with you, this is probably the best project I have put out there yet. It's called A Promise of Truth Self-Evident, A History of the United States, Part 1, Early American History. And it's a 700-page history book, early history. There's going to be three parts. This is up to Jefferson's election. Part 2 will be the 19th century. Part 3 will be from 1900 until today. And I'm very excited about it. It should be showing up on Amazon any day now if it's not already there. Check it out. A Promise of Truth Self-Evident, A History of the United States, Part 1, Early American History. And purchase that. If you want to get it autographed, you'll have to get it to me. I'll be glad to autograph it for you. And then we've got a few more books right behind that one. Or if my latest book before that one, Repeal Democracy, talks about how our system was not designed to be a democracy. It was designed to be a republic. And democracy, whenever it's used in its purest form, That's the problem we're having right now in this country. So check out Repeal Democracy by Douglas V. Gibbs. And don't forget, you can also, once again, become at DouglasVGibbs.com, you can become a patron. It's $9 a month, helps fund the movement, and it also, down the road, will give you all kinds of exclusionary gifts. Or you can also donate at paypal.com/paypalme/Douglas V. Gibbs, or you can Venmo Douglas-Gibbs-3, and then when it asks you for the last four, 3975. Or you can use Zelle, DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com, DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com. All right, thanks for spending the time with me. We'll see you next week. God bless. Stay constitutional. Until then, be safe. The preceding has been a production of Douglas V. Gibbs. Learn more at DouglasVGibbs.com, DouglasVGibbs.com. And remember, you can also become a patron. Once again, DouglasVGibbs.com. And then hit the join link in the link bar. Once again, it's $9 a month. Helps fund what we do. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. DouglasVGibbs.com. I am Mr. Constitution, Douglas V. Gibbs. This has been the Mr. Constitution Hour on KPRZ.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Our records indicate you've been lied to. Welcome to the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.
All I'm offering is the truth. Nothing more.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tired of the lies? Come here for the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.